Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, bitches? How's everybody doing? Hope you enjoyed your weekend. I got a lot to get to today. So we got the. I have a bunch of leftover questions from this 1,000th episode. Today, obviously, is the 1,001st episode, but I didn't get to enough. So I'm gonna at the end of the show today, I'm gonna squeeze in some more of those questions that everybody asked. Because we very, very rarely do Q&As. So we have that to look forward to. I mean, I got a bunch of news on the Democratic platform, Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders, all that fun stuff. And also, we have a great announcement here to get to, a very cool announcement. I'm actually really looking forward to this. And, in fact, I don't want to make you wait any longer. I want to go ahead and give the announcement right now because it's fun all around. So let's do it. So we have some pretty cool news here on Secular Talk. We have a great announcement to make for you guys. Secular Talk shirts are back. Now, we very, very, very rarely do this. I believe we've done it maybe only two other times. And the last time we did it, it was incredibly successful. For the last two times, I believe we had, there's only like the slightest difference between the shirts, but they're almost exactly the same. So I'm just going to go ahead and call the last two times first generation Secular Talk shirts. Now we have the second generation. So apparently Lilith decided to do this right. She runs a million things behind the scenes here at Secular Talk. And it looks like she put the first generation Secular Talk shirts up for sale again, which I know a lot of you have expressed interest in since you've seen me wearing it every now and then on the show. But we also have the second generation shirts, which I can't wait to buy. I'm looking forward to buying them. And just like we did about a year ago, what we're going to do is we're going to take 50% of the proceeds and put it towards Wolfpack. Wolfpack is, of course, the movement to get an amendment to the Constitution to get money out of the political system and mandate clean elections. Basically, as a constitutional right, you will have a constitutional right to clean elections. And for those of you who don't know, I mean, the movement has pressed on since the last time we raised some money for the cause. So as of right now, you have the Wolfpack Amendment passing in five states, and it's pending in another seven states. So this is happening, man. This is definitely happening. You know, we're doing a full court press here, and all the volunteers who are on the ground who are busting their ass, I mean, they're the real heroes for this. I mean, every once in a while we do what we can, and we try to raise some money, and we try to give moral support and whatnot, but there's a lot of people out there calling their representatives, their state representatives, getting involved directly. And by the way, you can be one of those people too. There's no reason not to be. I mean, there are a lot of people who've reached out to me and they've said, hey, man, what can I do? Like, I listen to your show sometimes and I get down because there's just not, I mean, there's not enough to, I feel like I'm just wasting away here and I want to get more involved and I want to be active and I want to be part of the solution. Well, this is part of the solution. If you want to be part of the solution, you go to wolf-pac.com. and go take a look. Go see what's going on. And, you know, they might need some foot soldiers in different states, and I'm sure they do because we're really trying to get this done. So we're going to do a fundraiser here. We're going to sell these shirts for you guys. It's $20 a piece. We have hoodies. We have men's shirts and women's shirts in both the first generation and the second generation shirts, which are for sale. So you will be definitely helping Wolfpack if you decide to purchase one of these shirts. And the other 50%, I'm always very happy and proud to say, we give to Lilith Penn. Now, again, Lilith Penn, for those of you who don't know, I'm sure people who've been listening for a long time are well aware of who she is. She does a million and one things for me behind the scenes here, and she does it all for absolutely nothing. Not only that, she does it while she's in school. Not only that, she does it while she's raising kids. So she doesn't have to do it. She chooses to do it. And then she chooses to absolutely positively bust her ass, and she does a bunch of stuff that the show couldn't go nearly as smoothly as it does without her. I need her here behind the scenes to do all these things for me. Every day she's in the chat talking to everybody, basically communicating with people, answering messages on Facebook. And by the way, I'm sure a large percentage of them are just hateful and shitty, but she's calm and she deals with everything like that, so I don't have to lose my mind and stuff like that. And she's been with Secular Talk for such a long time now, and every once in a while I like to show my appreciation, and the way we do that is we do one of these shirt drives, and half the proceeds go to her. So, you know, I mean, think about it, man. The more shirts we sell, not only do you get an awesome Secular Talk shirt, and again, I can't wait to buy one too, the second generation, but you're also helping Wolfpack and supporting Lilith, a hero of Secular Talk behind the scenes. So it's just, it's all upsides, man. And the way it works, so just so everybody knows, it's the same as the way it worked last time, which is we all buy the shirts. There's a certain time period for the shirts. I actually don't know what the exact time frame is that you can buy the shirts for, probably like 20 days or thereabouts. You can go to the site and you can read about it. But so you order your shirt or your shirts or your hoodie and your shirt or whatever, and then when the fundraiser is over, so like 20 days, 25 days from now, whatever it is, then they send them all out. So it's not like if you order it and it doesn't come in 3 days, 5 days, whatever the heck it is, just know that it is going to come, but it takes a while, and then when they shut it down, they ship it out to everybody. So that's the way the fundraiser works. I'm super excited for it. I know a lot of people have expressed a lot of interest in these Secular Talk shirts. Like I said, I mean, they're actually really rare too, which I guess makes them a little more special. Like, if we just had shirts all the time for any reason whatsoever, it's like, okay, yeah, whatever, you got Secular Talk shirts. No, but we do them super rarely. Like I said, only two other times before for limited time frames. There were the first generation shirts, which are still available. You can get those. I know a lot of you love those. I personally can't wait to wear the second generation shirt and hoodie. I'll definitely wear the shirt on the show. I'm looking forward to it. So go ahead, buy away. You're contributing to great causes, and you're getting an awesome shirt. Okay. So, there's the great news. Now, we move along to the news. A lot of stuff to get to. So, we have some news here on the Democratic platform. We have both good news and bad news about it. Bernie's committee picks did some really, really great work overall, but they didn't win on every single policy. Now, that's to be expected that they don't win on every policy, but at the same time, if you really want progressives and liberals to get involved and to hold their nose and vote for Hillary Clinton, you probably want to go all the way. So first of all, instead of Hillary Clinton's $12 minimum wage idea, which is what she argued for during the primary season, they went with Bernie Sanders' $15 minimum wage idea. That's a huge win. That shows that in some areas they're willing to make concessions. Now, the counter argument is, yeah, but it's just the platform. They could just ignore it. That's totally true. But at least you have them on paper saying, hey, this is what we're in favor of. And it's inching in the right direction, even if they don't necessarily hold true to it. At least, you know, your rhetoric is becoming more in line with what your base actually wants. And at least it shows that when you apply pressure from the left, eventually they buckle. Now, we need to get them to buckle more, and we need to get it to be, you know, as principled as humanly possible. But as I always tell you on this show, pressure works. It may work to varying degrees in different circumstances, but pressure does work. Now, the downside to this proposal is that, or I should say this amendment in the platform, is that the $15 minimum wage is not tied to inflation. That's actually a disaster because that's like the most important part of doing a minimum wage increase and getting a reform on the minimum wage is that you tie it to inflation, because then you never have to come back and deal with this issue again, because the minimum wage will always continue to rise with inflation. So it will always be a living wage if you make it a living wage. In fact, I've told you guys before, instead of getting the $15 minimum wage and not having it tied to inflation, I would rather have the $12 minimum wage and have it tied to inflation. Because according to most economists, $12 is a living wage. And then, so if you have a living wage and you tie it to inflation, you don't have to come back and revisit it. To do 15 and not tie it to inflation, for a while, you get the living wage. But then, you know, years down the road, I don't know how many years, but 40, 50, whatever it may be, all of a sudden, boom, you got to revisit the issue again. And they're not making a living wage anymore because of inflation. It wiped out that increase. So the good news is you got 15. The bad news is it's not tied to inflation, and the not tied to inflation part really is disastrous. So then we move along here, and they also came out for abolishing the death penalty. That's huge, and that's totally because of Bernie Sanders. And they also came out for expanding Social Security. Wins across the board there. Wins across the board. So Bernie Sanders has been, you know, a lion on this issue, basically saying, hey, we kill the wrong people sometimes, so how the heck can we have the death penalty? Unless you're in favor of state-sanctioned murder of innocent people every now and then, it makes no sense to have the death penalty. Now, Hillary tried to maintain during the debating season, during the primary, oh, yes, no, I feel so bad about it. It's so horrible. It's so terrible. But we need to reserve it for certain situations. Well, Bernie's side won on that issue. And understand that expanding Social Security, that's something that, this is so clearly Bernie's influence that we know as a matter of fact it wouldn't have happened without Bernie's influence. Because, honestly, he took a position here that I never even thought of. Like, every time I would come out here and defend Social Security and defend Medicaid and Medicare, I would just say, we can't cut it. That's as far as my argument would go. Bernie took it further. Bernie's like, no, why not expand it? Wouldn't that be better? And a bunch of progressives around the country went, oh, right, that's how you fight. Because if you say that, well, then what does the compromise become? The compromise becomes, I guess we leave it as is and we don't cut it. See, this is how you play politics. You shoot for the stars, you might reach the moon. Let's expand Social Security. And the Republicans say, no, let's cut it. Okay, compromise. Leave it as it is. Don't cut it. It's a brilliant political tactic. And by the way, Bernie doesn't even necessarily use it as a political tactic. Bernie says it because he wants to expand Social Security. Wildly popular government program. It has a gigantic surplus. And all the fear-mongering over it is just that, fear-mongering. So that's another great step in the right direction. Now, I got more here. The platform also calls for, quote, an updated and modernized version of Glass-Steagall. So that's good because it says the words Glass-Steagall. There may be a downside to it because it says an updated and modernized version, which, I mean, it sounds good on paper, but that could give somebody like Hillary Clinton wiggle room to say, my updated and modernized version has like 8,000 loopholes and makes it ineffectual. In the same way that Dodd-Frank, like on paper, not so bad, but then they put in so many loopholes that it's like, you basically had Wall Street go back to doing the same shit they were doing beforehand. So in the hands of somebody like Hillary Clinton and a Hillary Clinton administration, updating and modernizing Glass-Steagall is just wiggle room to get out of putting back in place Glass-Steagall. No, just do traditional Glass-Steagall. And then on top of that, if you need to do new legislation that has new efficient regulations. But there was nothing wrong with old school Glass-Steagall. Let's remember that. So now we get to the bad, and yes, the bad is very, very bad. Opposing the TPP was shot down. Naturally, you have Bernie's people saying, no, we're not going to be in favor of TPP, period. Hillary's people, Debbie Wasserman Schultz people, when it comes to trade deals, we can't be just against trade deals. That's crazy. We need to be in favor of trade deals that are great for workers and the American people, so yay, trade deals. Anybody buying this? This is the new trick that they use, the neoliberals use. They go, oh, no, of course, you look at NAFTA, you look at all the previous trade deals. Yeah, okay, they're kind of bad, but they're bad because of the nature of those trade deals. That doesn't mean the trade deals in and of themselves are bad. Therefore, we're still in favor of trade deals. I mean, we're not crazy. We're not barbarians over here. So we're just in favor of trade deals that are good for workers. Really, you're going to trust Hillary Clinton to make those trade deals that are good for workers when there's stories about how, I think it was in Haiti, she negotiated down their minimum wage. She cares so much about workers around the world that she negotiated down the minimum wage in Haiti. I mean, we're talking about cents there. That's what the minimum wage is. She's a lion for the corporation, and she's like, no, let's lower that a little bit. So, no, we don't trust you. And when you use those, you know, tap dancing words and that language of, oh, well, we're in favor of trade deals, but they got to be smart trade deals. Understand that we don't trust your judgment in what is smart and what isn't smart because you're bought off. So the language to flat out oppose the TPP was shot down. Now remember, Obama, Democratic president, in favor of the TPP. This has a lot to do with it. And by the way, Hillary Clinton, oh, so disgusting. She goes out on Twitter and she's retweeting all the provisions of the Democratic platform that are positive. Virtually all of them were solely influenced by Bernie Sanders and his team. So they do all the hard work. They fight Hillary Clinton's cronies behind the scenes, and then when they pass, Hillary Clinton tweets it out like she's the one who birthed these ideas. Now, look, don't get me wrong. I'm happy that she's, like, not totally being against these, even in her rhetoric. But it's just disingenuous to act like, oh, yes, this is what I've been for all along. On TPP, too, she tweets, like, or she retweets something that says that, oh, Hillary was also is also against TPP. But wait a second. Bernie's people were obviously fighting to have language against the TPP in the platform. That means who opposed the language? Well, it had to be Hillary's people and Debbie Wasserman Schultz's people. So your team blocks it, and then she's out there tweeting about how, oh, it's a shame that it was blocked. Your fucking people blocked it. What are you talking about? God, it's so fucking slimy, man. It's so slimy. And then also we have a national freeze on fracking was slapped down. Gee, I wonder why. Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, pushed fracking all around the world. So this is another reason why she's a neoliberal and she's a corporatist Democrat, and this is why the progressive base does not trust her, and they're right to not trust her. A carbon tax was slapped down, and single-payer health care was slapped down. That hurts, man. That hurts. We got a Democratic Party that is a shadow of its former self. And remember, guys, Bernie's team fought like crazy on all these different individual provisions. And it was Debbie Wasserman Schultz's people and Hillary Clinton's people that were like, man, that one, I don't know about that. Hillary's position on health care never made sense. Because she says all the time, well, look, I like Obamacare. So what we need to do is add on to Obamacare. What would be the next logical step from Obamacare if you want to add on to Obamacare, this vague thing that's not specific at all and doesn't give any policy details? Let's add on to it. Okay, well, what's the next step from Obamacare? Public option. The public option, that's it. So, okay, that's moving to a more progressive position. But then when you say, hey, do you want to do that? No, I don't know about that. So then what do you mean add on? And by the way, what's the end goal to an add on from Obamacare? You go from Obamacare to public option to single payer. So single payer is the end all be all. That's always been the position, the true progressive liberal democratic position for the longest time, a national health care system like every other modern nation has. But she attacks Bernie for being in favor of a single payer system, as she pretends like she wants to add on to Obamacare to eventually get to a single-payer system. And then her cronies and her puppets in the platform process, they just shoot it down. No, single-payer? Meh. Not interested. Okay, well then just call it what it is. You're taking the position that Republicans used to take. There was a time when Hillary was in favor of single-payer. Then she took so much money from the health industry, and look at that, now she's not in favor of single-payer anymore. This is one of those clear examples where it's like, you know, The corruption and the bribery is right in your face. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, just like the bankruptcy bill, where she flipped on the bankruptcy bill that helps corporations. So Bernie's people fighting like crazy for it, and it gets slapped down by Hillary Clinton. You know, you wonder why, what is it, 50%, 55% of Bernie's people say, I don't think I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton. It's because of shit like this. And Bernie is 100% right when he says, even if I tell them, hey, you got to vote for her, that's not... That, like what? Are they just going to shut off their brains and go, oh, my political daddy told me to do this and that? No. They're going to go, I don't know about that, man. I don't know about that. So it's up to her to bring them in and to make a good faith effort to say, I'm going to be significantly better than Donald Trump in all these different ways. And by the way, you have to do that in a way that's honest, too. You can't do it in a way that's like I was just describing, how you – in a sleazy way, retweet the provisions that Bernie's people got. Like, because that's just disingenuous. We know that you weren't the one who was pushing for it. So, you honestly, you'd have to go out there to really get progressives. You'd have to go out there and admit your previous mistakes and call them mistakes. As of right now, there's no evidence that she actually thinks these things are mistakes. All her terrible, terrible, terrible votes, supporting NAFTA, supporting deregulation, voting for the Patriot Act. On the Iraq War, she apologizes, but you get the sense she's just doing it for political reasons. If she came out and she gave a speech where she outlined all the shitty parts about her past, and she said, here's how I want to move forward, and here's how I want to be better, and still, here's where my differences are with Bernie Sanders, well, we can respect that. But it never comes across like that. And it's always the case that within the Democratic Party, her forces are the forces to drag us back and to give us more shitty neoliberal Republican-like policies, and Bernie's people are the people who are actually fighting for what are the traditional Democratic positions. This isn't a lot to ask for. This isn't crazy. And if you oppose this, well, just keep it real and call it what it is. You're just not as liberal, you're not as progressive, and you're comfortable being a center-right Democrat. Okay. All right, let me do one more here, and then we'll take a break. The Hill is reporting on a Hillary Clinton fundraising story, and to me, this literally evoked a cringe. So they say the following. The Hillary Clinton campaign is hitting Broadway for its next fundraiser with a special performance of the hit Hamilton, expected to raise millions. The event will raise money for Clinton's joint fund with the DNC. The campaign has rented out the entire 1,300-seat Richard Rogers Theater for an additional performance of the production on July 12th. General admission tickets cost $2,700, and a $100,000 ticket comes with two premium seats with Clinton and an invite to the Democratic National Convention next month. This makes me sick, man. This makes me sick. She's everything that's wrong with the establishment. She is the status quo. She is business as usual. She loves money in politics. I think the thing that gets under my skin so much about this, because we already knew how bad she was, is just how even after all the accurate attacks from Bernie Sanders and all the people who are mad at her from her left, she does it still, and she does it in the most smug ways, and she acts like if you think there's something wrong with this, the problem is you. The problem is not her. No, Hillary, the problem is you. I mean, this is like a heroin addict who doesn't even realize that they have a problem when they're sucking dick behind a dumpster at an Arby's and they haven't showered in a week and a half. Like, what do you mean? There's no problem with me. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not doing anything wrong at all. This is just the way it works. No. This is grotesque. This is, forget democracy. This is like out-and-out oligarchy. I mean, we like to rip Russia for having the oligarchs and having such a large amount of the wealth and a tiny percentage of the hands. What the fuck do you think this is? This has nothing to do with policy substance. This has nothing to do with improving the lives of various people. This has to do with out-and-out corruption and bribery. You give me money, I do your bidding. Just to sit next to her, $100,000. $100,000 to be in the presence of the queen. And then when you give the queen the money, well, obviously, hey, then you get to come to the DNC. Then when you call and she's in the White House, she's going to take that call. And who knows, maybe you're from Goldman Sachs, maybe you're from some other firm. Hey, Hillary, look, I'm just saying, we got this special tax cut that's coming up, or we got this corporate subsidy bill that's coming up, or we got this Cayman Islands issue that's coming up, and we need you to make sure you vote the right way. Remember all that money? Remember that $100,000 I gave you, and then we sat next to each other at Hamilton? And it's also co-opting something. I mean, the Hamilton, everybody views, oh, yes, this progressive thing that gets kids involved in politics. Dude, this is a special extra performance that they're doing, and they're doing it to allow Hillary Clinton to do more political bribery. This is also just – it's so symbolic of Hillary Clinton's entire campaign. Use the rhetoric of change. Use the rhetoric of young progressives and liberals, and you use that as a mask to do the same business-as-usual bullshit behind the scenes. So you go out there and talk about intersectionality and feminism and, oh, yes, we care about all these liberal causes. And then behind the scenes, you're raising $100,000 a pop for some jackass to sit next to you so you can do his bidding. And am I supposed to think you're really concerned about, you know, the things progressives really care about? Hey, we need to stop the wars, and we got to stop these wars ASAP. They're creating more terrorists. You know, all these free trade deals are what's leading to wages being driven downwards, and it's hurting the American middle class. You know, hey, we need to re-regulate Wall Street. These guys are running crazy. Look at the growth since the crash. It's unnatural. It's just another bubble. It's going to burst eventually. She doesn't give a flying fuck about any of that. Cares about is becoming president, using the system as it's set up right now, and she's a master at using the system as it's set up right now. I mean, she takes money individually with the speeches and whatnot. She takes money for her campaign, she takes money for the super PAC, and she takes money through the Clinton Foundation. How many fucking avenues of corruption is it possible to have? I mean, that's so many. It's almost like you lose count at a certain point. And we can trace everything, too. So, like, foreign governments give Bill Clinton money to give a speech for the Clinton Foundation, and then lo and behold, Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, approves a weapons deal to said government. I mean, what do you think, we're fucking stupid? Is that what you think we are? And again, as Bernie Sanders hammers her on corruption and money in politics and the rigged system and Wall Street owns our political process and, you know, Wall Street regulates Congress. Congress doesn't regulate Wall Street. He's saying all these things. He's 100% right. He cares about the substance. He focuses on it. What does Hillary do? Oh, yes, totally, Bernie. You are so right about all of this. Now let me go to a fundraiser with fucking Hamilton and raise 100 grand for some idiot to sit next to me so that I can do his bidding when I'm elected. It's not okay. And if you look at this and you don't think it's a problem, you're part of the problem. I mean, this is the problem with politics. And what's so amazing is watching liberals do a 180. And, you know, Donald Trump was having trouble raising money for his campaign. Now, he wants to be corrupt. He wants to be bought. He's going around to the same billionaires and begging them. But they don't want to buy him because he's a loose cannon. They don't know what the fuck he's going to do. They don't like his populist rhetoric on certain things. And sometimes his xenophobia and bigotry goes too far even for the billionaires. But you have liberals turn around. What do? They bash Donald Trump. Ha ha, he can't raise money. Ha ha, he can't raise money from Wall Street. What an idiot. And then as Hillary's raising money, all of a sudden all the criticism, where'd your principled nature about money and politics go? Where'd it go? Poof, gone. The Democrat all of a sudden is the one who's buddy-buddy with Wall Street and cuddling with them and going to Hamilton and raising $100,000 a pop. Now all of a sudden, oh, maybe money and politics not so bad when it helps our candidate. Not okay, man. Not okay. Hillary, if you really want Bernie supporters to vote for you and you need them to win, you have to move left, make a good faith effort on showing everybody you move left, and be honest about who you are and what you've done. And as of right now, it appears like she couldn't be more blind to the issues. She couldn't be more blind to it. She does everything dead wrong. She reaches out more to right-wingers and Republican donors than she does to progressives, and she smugly and arrogantly thinks, I got this shit on lock. Do you now? Do you? All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have another story on Hillary Clinton's secrecy and corruption. Oh, boy. And then we have a prominent Republican leaving the Republican Party over Trump. We'll listen to what his reasoning is, then I'll tell you what the real reason probably is. Stay right there.
That's the stuff that you're into. That's a bit forward, isn't it? Well, maybe you could come back to mine if you want. Well, you know, if you want to get really dirty.
Finger on the button. That Cold War threat. Finger on the button. Got that lover in the cold sweat. Finger on the button. Finger in the bottom button, blouse from bottom up, top off, pop that, drop that, like your tight pocket full of that wet, wet, get wet, are you wet yet, let that wet hit on him, rim licking lightly, like lollipop, like you naughty bitch, don't act like you forgot, wait, what's your name, what's your sign, what's your number, what's your type, face about, face it now, face her in the mirror, watch that ass go, what you let go of that ass for, that ass for, 100 years in the making that. How we ain't gon' lick that asshole. Shitty ears. Take that finger ride and drop it to the damn floor. Damn, oh, damage to the dental. Damn, death time to find. He like a lot of bite when he grinds.
Yeah, I think we should get out of here soon. I bet you're good at that, aren't you? Look at that pretty mouth. No, it's just a bit wrong.
A bitch like me only talk to freaks. Wood pad on bare cheeks. Side saddle when I ride the beat. Hot gold showers on white sheets. Deep throat with no teeth. Rock a studded collar with a leather leash. Spin cycle, rest and repeat. And it kicks fast, so come get the peak. Third trap, watch with that. Snapchat, TSL, get a pick of the dick back. Warm it up, serve it up when I freak that. First time, if you really try to eat that. Glory hole high, should I really peep that. Rip fit it like the sleeve on his hat back. Nibble on it, make a bite back. Sugar cane, honeycombs, every time I nigga taste that. Bitch, I'm only here to take back. Shake it down to the grab, grab, grab with the chit chat. Really wanna come and get that. We can meet up in a telly if you ready for the rematch. I'm hosted up, sipping nice tea. A little amnesia, waiting to white feet. And I got him open, stroked and pricey. Cause I get this hot spot, I gotta stay icy. Ooh, floppy head, don't need your back seat. Let me look at Zach while we listen to that Cassie. You know I'm trying to make it nasty. And the niggas that I fuck be the type to try to bash me. Poppy does try to smash me. Look, I'ma make it hot, you enough on my ass cheek. I'm just playing, y'all, I'm classy. Straight to it when a nigga, if he really trying to gas me.
You know, I do have really pretty feet. And maybe I can just rub them all. Yeah, I can tell you that's fine.
by mile, take it with a smile, buy into the violin, when he's like a child, slaying. No kids allowed to know this, the shouts, no match with this, and this match, you grab it, steal, steal, too much, you want it, don't touch it, loving on such and such, and so what, it's like, just frame of mind, about to my thing, toxic, the sense is intoxicating, and all the waiting, and masturbating, the dick is chasing, where's the lotion, where's the thong, you like you in motion, not too emotional, please, not to worry, you try and get a please, no love, not now, hot butt, hop down, off your high horse, cock crave, jockey, stopwatch, cock back, Jackie, pizza, you come, these nuts, no nuts, go there, mo head, every minute make a motherfucker work for it, fucking name another motherfucker turf for it, stuck in the concussion for the headboard, bang, better slang that cane like cane, and he framed for the white sticky licky, got him on the sticky wicket with it, wishing it was ready, when it's up and right again, and in a minute, the venom is, he go ahead and pull it out, and when you finish, tell the bitch, you get up out of your house.
Clinton and her massive corruption. Don't blame me, blame her. These are the stories that are in the news. So we have another story here on Hillary Clinton's secrecy and corruption. The AP reports, an Associated Press review of the official calendar Hillary Clinton kept as Secretary of State identified at least 75 meetings with longtime political donors, Clinton Foundation contributors, and corporate and other outside interests that were not recorded or omitted the names of those she met. All right, so understand that as Secretary of State, you get all your stuff is logged because you're Secretary of State, kind of an important position. So they found that, and they only got this because the press sued the government for access to the records under the Freedom of Information Act. So they sue them, and then they find out, oh, hold on now. All these meetings, at least 75 meetings with political donors and corporate people and people for the Clinton Foundation, they were omitted from the records. Well, why would you do that? Then you get into the really sticky conversation, and to me it's the only logical conclusion that one can reach from this. She probably met with these people because she knew that eventually she would run for president, and she's soliciting money and donations or letting them know as to what's going to happen moving forward. And that is a clear violation of the few remaining election laws that we have left. Because understand the way it works. This is what Jeb Bush did too when he before he ran. So he would drop hints and just basically almost say he's going to run without saying he's running. And so he'd go around and raise money for his super PAC. So you go around and you say, I am seriously, seriously, seriously considering running for president, which is why I'm here in Iowa giving a speech, the first place where they vote. And, you know, hey, I'm not saying anything, but if you want to go ahead and help out the campaign, just know the place you can give it right over there. So Jeb Bush did that. It was obviously a way to skirt the few remaining election laws we have left. And Hillary Clinton didn't want all of these attempts and meetings with political donors to be recorded because then there would be red flags, and there would be red flags because, hey, where there's smoke, there's fire. And, it, you know, those meetings, something went down in those meetings, and something went down that she didn't want people to hear or else they would have been recorded. I mean, think about it. If you're Secretary of State, okay, just record the meeting, and then when somebody asks me, hey, what did you meet with that person for, you say, I don't know, I met with them for whatever, policy, this, that, certain contracts, certain deals that involve the State Department. You could just say that, and there's nothing wrong with that or illegal about that. I mean, there might be some ethical issues with having corporate leaders in the government so close anyway. In fact, there is. But no law would be violated, and you would have the transparency of saying, hey, look, the meeting was recorded, so I'm not trying to hide anything. But you did try to hide it. You omitted it from the records. The only reason why you would omit it from the record, why you would leave it off the records, is that something's going on that you don't want people to know about. And what would that thing be? Hey, I'm running for president, and that's a sure thing, so I'm just letting you know in advance, if you want to raise the money, you want to help out here or there, hey, this is what you can do to help. That would be a violation of election law. Now, unfortunately, even the few remaining election laws we have are not enforced, because the way the system is set up, it's permanent gridlock. You have just the right number of Democrats and Republicans where if the Democrats violate the law, the Democrats say, well, we're not going to move forward on this one. If the Republicans violate the law, the Republicans say, well, we're not going to move forward on this one. So it's just a free-for-all. It's anarchy when it comes to the fundraising and when it comes to bribery and corruption. It's just open season. So effectively, our representative democracy and constitutional republic is no longer that. It's just an oligarchy. And understand this in the context of the last story we just did. So in the last story we did, we had Hillary Clinton going to an extra. They don't even do the show anymore, or they're stopping Hamilton, the show Hamilton, the Broadway show. They're doing an extra show just so Hillary Clinton can raise money. It costs $100,000 to sit next to her. It costs $2,700 just to get into the building. So now, what does that show you? Now it's like, well, I'm already running, and there's certain ways that you can raise the money, which doesn't violate election law. So it's balls to the wall and show everybody what you're doing. So she's fully embraced the legalized bribery and corruption, and she ain't even trying to hide it anymore, which shows her smugness and her arrogance. Back when she was Secretary of State, she was like, okay, we got to try to hide this. Because, again, you would be violating election law if you were to do it in that context and in that scenario. So it shows you the way this political machine operates. They're always on the edge of the law. They're always on the edge of the law, if not violating it and covering it up. So in the case of the State Department, if she's talking to donors and saying, I'm going to run and trying to raise money, that would violate the law. That's why, hey, it's omitted from the records. What are you going to do? Lack of evidence isn't evidence, right? Hey, it could just be a coincidence. You don't know. You can't prove it in a court of law. There's a reasonable doubt, isn't there? But now that you're running, now everybody knows you're running, and we know what the laws are, hey, let's just skirt those laws in the smuggest way possible, even though obviously you're still doing bribery, and let's go to this Hamilton show. It's sick, man. It's sick. And they've put the American people in an impossible position. You vote for this absolute shill to the establishment, business as usual, status quo, through and through. Or you vote for the monstrous xenophobe and bigot who is borderline fascist, if not outright fascist, and has such a thin skin that you can't trust him with nukes and an army. What a horrible situation we're put in this election. Okay. All right, now let's go to George Will and see what his take is on the Republican Party in its current state. Prominent Republican pundit George Will announced that he left the Republican Party over Donald Trump. Let's watch.
You announced this week that you have left the Republican Party. Why?
I left it for the same reason I joined it in 1964 when I voted for Barry Goldwater. I joined it because I was a conservative. I leave for the same reason that I'm a conservative. Give you a timeline. Shortly after Trump became the presumptive nominee, he had a summit with Paul Ryan where they stressed their common principles and their vast shared ground, which is much more important than their differences. I thought that was puzzling, doubly so, because Paul Ryan still didn't endorse him. After Trump went after the Mexican judge from northern Indiana, then Paul Ryan endorsed him. And I decided that, in fact, this is not my party anymore. I changed my registration to unaffiliated 23 days ago. I hardly made an announcement. I just mentioned this in a meeting with the Federalist Society. So the long and the short of it is, as Ronald Reagan said when he changed his registration, I did not leave the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party left me.
Now, not surprisingly, Donald Trump has tweeted his reaction to this news today. Let's put it up on the screen. He says that you are overrated and that you lost your way a long time ago. Would you like to respond,
well,
Mr. Trump?
He has an advantage on me because he can say everything he knows about any subject in 140 characters and I can't.
All right.
That was actually a pretty good burn at the end there. I give him credit for that. The first time I saw it, I did chuckle a little bit. I was like, oh, shit. Because that's kind of true about Trump, like short bursts. And he says it, and he says it aggressively and powerfully, and people go, yeah, it just pierces through even into thick-headed people's minds. They're like, yeah, I get what he's saying. Mexican's bad. Yeah. But overall, let's understand exactly where George Will is coming from here. Now, he mentioned, he dropped in there the thing about, oh, he attacked the Mexican judge, which is why I cannot in good faith stay in the Republican Party anymore. He uses that as his reason why. But wait a second. When Trump launched his campaign, what did he say? He said, the Mexicans, they're rapists, they're criminals. I assume some are good people. He, much later on, said, I want to ban all Muslims from entering the United States. Okay, when he became the nominee, those things still existed. He still said those things. That wasn't when George Will left the Republican Party. That wasn't when he left the Republican Party. So we already knew he was a xenophobe and a bigot. I mean, he said those things early on. He said he wants to deport 11 million people early on. Well, why didn't you leave the party then, or why didn't you leave the party right when he became the nominee? It doesn't make any sense. Because you're feigning, oh my God, it's the bigotry. I can't take it. I can't take it. Okay, but what about Mitt Romney? So you didn't leave the party over Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney famously said, 47% of the population of the country will never take responsibility for their own actions. They don't believe in working hard. They believe in handouts. They believe in free stuff. They're moochers. They're parasites. His famous 47% comment. Who's included in that 47%? He's talking about Democrats. So overwhelmingly, he's talking about minorities. Over 90% of the black community, for example, vote Democratic. So you're just saying the black community, moochers, parasites. It's pretty fucking racist, man. It's pretty xenophobic and bigoted. But did he leave the Republican Party then? I can't. This is so, look at this, bigotry. I can't take it. I must leave. This doesn't represent me. No, he didn't. He voted for Mitt Romney. In fact, he predicted Romney would win in a landslide. He loved Mitt Romney. So what is it? Why would you leave the Republican Party now after the history? I mean, the Republicans admit they ran the Southern strategy for decades. They still do. The Southern strategy means try to get white racists in the South to vote for you because you're not going to get minorities. So all of a sudden, now, oh my God, he said something about a Mexican judge. I cannot believe it. No, you know what it's really about? It's about Trump's economic populism. For those of you who don't know anything about George Will and you don't know anything about these establishment Republicans, and that's what they are through and through, the establishment, all they care about is free trade deals because it makes their corporate buddies richer. All they care about is reforming Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid. / privatizing to hand all the money over to their buddies on Wall Street and screw over the American people. So don't get it twisted. He got no problem with the xenophobia and the bigotry. Sure, Trump is more out there with it and straightforward with it, and they prefer the coded language. But the thing that really, really gets under their skin is, hey, sometimes when he talks about politics and economic issues, he just sounds like a liberal. I mean, we covered his speech against Hillary Clinton recently. His first 11 minutes of his speech was just wall-to-wall liberalism. I'm not kidding. You go listen to it for yourself, man. Everything was that Hillary Clinton is corrupt. She raised this amount of money from this person, that amount of money from that person. We need to stop with these free trade deals. We got to do this. We got to do that. I want Bernie Sanders voters. Come to me. Now, again, I don't believe him, so let's be clear about that. He's a liar. He's a con artist, and he's actually not a bad one. So he can really do people over. But that's why he's mad, because guys like George Will, they don't know, hey, are my donor buddies going to be able to control him? Is he going to be a sufficient puppet? They don't know. They don't know the answer to that. Now, I think maybe that is the case, that they can control him, and he'll end up being the most establishment politician in human history. But they don't know, because he seems like a fucking loose cannon. He's off the walls. He says one thing one day, another thing another day. He's got thin skin. It's so obvious. He doesn't have the temperament. He has the temperament of a toddler. So they look and they're like, I don't know if we can control him. So now we all got to, you know, stage this coup. Bill Kristol, I'm leaving the Republican Party. George Will, oh, me too. It's like the only people on the planet who I dislike more than Donald Trump is you. George Will, there's like people are acting or pretending like this makes him a good person now. Do you know nothing about politics? And do you know nothing about George Will's record? He's in favor of every bad policy ever done in human history. So here you got a guy, oh my God, more tax cuts for the rich. Oh my God, more unnecessary wars. Oh yeah, let's do more free trade deals. Yay. And now people are like, oh, so principled leaving the party over Trump. The fuck are you talking about? Again, Bill Kristol, George Will, these are the only people on the planet who are worse than Trump. So don't misunderstand why they're really doing what they're doing. It's not about the xenophobia and the bigotry. That was obvious from day one, and they had nothing to say about it early on. They had nothing to say about it when it was Mitt Romney. Okay, this has to do with his position, or what he says is his position, I don't think it really is, on economic issues. And they don't like the fact that there's a chance he won't cut Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and he won't do more free trade deals, and he won't partake in the money and politics system, even though he's trying to. So that's what this is really about. Okay. Now let's go to Jake Tapper. He went after Bernie Sanders. And I do not agree in which the way he did it. Jake Tapper went after Bernie Sanders for allegedly not doing everything he can to defeat Trump.
With all due respect, Senator, I'm not viewing this as a game. I'm looking at the fact that I talk to your supporters all the time, and many of them do not want to vote for Hillary Clinton. They feel very negatively towards her. And if it is important to you, as you say it is, to defeat Donald Trump, I wonder if you're truly doing everything you can do to defeat Donald Trump.
Oh, I am going to do everything that I can to do to defeat Donald Trump. But a lot of that responsibility about winning the American people over to her side is going to rest with Secretary Clinton. Is she going to address the issues that many, we got something like 12, 13 million votes. And those people voted for me, I believe, because they said it is time to have a president prepared to have the guts to stand up to big money interests, to stand up to the greed of corporate America, to end these disastrous trade policies, to make certain that the wealthiest people and largest corporations start paying their fair share of taxes, to rebuild our infrastructure, to create health care to all people. So it's not just Bernie Sanders saying, oh, you know, yeah, just vote for Hillary Clinton. It is Hillary Clinton standing up and saying, you know what, these are the things we need to do. And if she does the right thing, I am absolutely confident that the vast majority of my supporters will vote for her. And that is the process we are engaged in right now.
Jake Tapper's question presupposes that Democratic politicians can't fail the people. Only the people can fail Democratic politicians. So he frames it in a way where the underlying assumption and premise is Hillary is entitled to those votes. And if she doesn't get them, whose fault is it? Who am I going to blame? I know, I'll blame this guy, talking about Bernie Sanders. So my question to Jake Tapper and to anybody who would think this line of questioning is legitimate is, whose fault is it that many Bernie supporters, about 50%, don't like Hillary Clinton? Whose fault is that? Whose fault is that? In a world that made sense, it's Hillary Clinton's fault. If she cannot get people to like her and agree with her and vote for her, even in the face of a monster like Donald Trump, that just shows how weak of a candidate she is. It doesn't say anything about Bernie Sanders. It doesn't say anything about his policy positions. It shows that she has fundamentally failed on the issues and the substance and the policy that matters to real liberals and real progressives. But no, they frame it like it can never be Hillary Clinton's fault. You got to fall in line. You got to do this. You got to do that. You got to make sure that you defeat Donald Trump by just supporting her, support her, support her. Well, again, that's the opposite of democracy. Shut the fuck up. Fall in line. Don't think. Don't dissent. Just worship the queen and vote for her and don't make a peep because the opposition is so bad that that's what you have to do. No, she needs to earn those votes. And then probably the most important point here is this, and this is overlooked by almost everybody. Bernie Sanders staying in there, being a thorn in the side of the establishment, and forcing the Democratic Party and the platform to move left. If anything, that helps Hillary Clinton. They might not even realize it, and in fact, they almost certainly don't realize it because they're still running the 1990-style New Democrat campaign that Bill Clinton ran and won on, where you got to be centrist, you got to triangulate, you got to be, you know, a right-wing Democrat in order to win because you get the crossover voters that way. They're running on that model. Well, it's not the 1990s anymore. We had George W. Bush. We had the neoconservatives. Everybody hated that. We want real left-wing change. We want real progressive change. So by Bernie coming in and Bernie saying, I'm not going anywhere, and I'm going to force you to the left on the Democratic platform, I'm going to force your rhetoric to be left-wing, that actually helps her. It helps her. But if she keeps resisting and if she keeps moving right as he's in there specifically to move her left, which would help her, well, then that's fucking her fault 100%. And we read articles on this recently where some people are saying, Hillary Clinton has a general election pivot problem. Okay, it's crazy that these reporters and journalists have just bought into this pivot where, oh yeah, you just go back on everything you said in the primary and now you move right. So in other words, you admit that you lied during the primary and you move right. So they say that she's got a general election pivot problem because, oh, she wasn't able to move right sooner. That's the problem. She needed to move right sooner because that helps her get these phantom independents on the right and moderate Republicans who will vote for her. They're not going to fucking vote for her. The only ones who will vote for her, I'll give you this. Establishment Republicans and neoconservatives who don't like Trump because they're not sure if their money can control him and they're not sure if he'll do all the wars because half the time he says liberal shit on foreign policy. So the only Republicans that would consider her are establishment Republicans. The Republican base is 100% against Hillary Clinton. They've never met a politician they hate more. But she would rather go that way to try to get voters she can't get then move left to try to get left-wing independents who she has a shot at if she would just listen to Bernie Sanders and propose the policies he's in favor of. The problem is not Bernie Sanders. The problem is Hillary Clinton. If she can't get the votes, it's her fault. It's not his fault. By him staying in the race, he is helping her. By staying left, forcing her left, she gets more voters. She gets more of his voters, which is what she needs to win. Bernie Sanders, what does he win? Independents. Bernie Sanders, what does he win? Millennials. Who does Hillary Clinton need in order to win the general election? Independents and millennials. But in their infinite arrogance and smugness, move right, Bernie, why are you still in the race? Bernie, oh my God, it's your fault that these people aren't in favor of her. They need to just fall in line and vote for her. No, she needs to earn their vote, and by moving right, she's doing the opposite. All right, let me take my final break now, and then when we come back, I'm going to breeze through a bunch of stories because then we have to get to the questions that I promised you guys. I got some leftover questions from the Secular Talk 1000th show. In fact, I'll just do that right when we come back from the break as opposed to waiting till the end because there's still some awesome questions that we have to get to. And wouldn't want to miss out on it again, Z's. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back.
So we can sing along. Everything is all I have to give you, and I'm a
Sometimes you feel yourself turn into the white type. And when it's dark, sometimes he's the nightlight. But most of the time, she doesn't even feel lifelike. She got a man, but he thinks he's a star. And it feels like he has to compete with the bar. She keeps up her guard, but it seems so hard. Mama never told her she would see those scars. Every night he's out doing who knows whom. While she cries alone like a new show tune. Last call passes, he coming home sooner. Is he gonna run away with the dish and the spoon? She'll realize she don't want that clown. Leave those shoes at the lost and found. He won't catch on until she's not around. After somebody else already locked that down. We think everything is all I have to give you. And I'm afraid it ain't enough. And you're not so young that you believe me. Just because I stay in love. Even if they come to steal you tomorrow, I know my smile was yours. Go ahead and chase your dreams and your freedom. Run, run wild, wild horses. You can't tame these horses. You can't tame these horses. No, you can't tame these horses. You can't tame these horses. He didn't want her to see him leave, and he couldn't keep sitting there watching her sleep. Cause he knows if he hangs out for a few hours, he'll dig another hole trying to plant some new flowers. But the sun don't shine under the table. He's trying to hold his life together with staples. No investment, cause he's incapable. And he's on the outro of being labeled available. The word on the street is this girl's coming back home. No more alone, no more sad poems. No after bar calls to the cell phone. It's time to walk a new path and grow a backbone. Shoved into the big book of Judge Brent. Wondering how he would look as a husband. And every one of them he ever allowed to love him. Now watching from the crowd, trying to be proud of him. Everything is all I have to give you. And I'm afraid it ain't enough. And you're not so young that you believe me. Just because I stay in love. Even if they come to steal you tomorrow, I know my smile was yours. Go ahead and chase your dreams and your freedom. Run, run wild, wild horses. You can't tame these horses. You can't tame these horses. No, you can't tame these horses. You can't tame these horses.
Son of a bitch. All right, guys, we're back. We're back. We're back. We're back. Lot to get to. Let's kind of speed through it a little bit. So Friday was the 1,000th Secular Talk episode. We did a little bit of a special thing where I did some Q&A. I didn't get to all of it, and I feel like I didn't do a significant amount, enough to feel satisfied. So on our 1,001st show, I'm going to go ahead and finish answering the first batch of questions that you guys sent in. So Enrique Sanchez asks, do you believe that the Bernie or Bust movement should just not participate in this election or maybe vote for a third-party candidate? So this is a question that I've actually answered in detail in two debates and discussions. One was on TYT the night of the New York election when Bernie lost. The other, actually, you guys should definitely check out. I spoke to somebody who's 100% Bernie or Bust, had a great conversation. And that's also up on the YouTube channel. Went on for about an hour. He kind of pressed me on some things, changed my mind on some things, but not on everything, because I've always considered myself like 50% Bernie or Bust is how I describe it. So what that means is this. I'm in New York. New York is definitely going to go blue. It's going to go Hillary no matter what. So I'm voting for probably Jill Stein. Because if you don't absolutely positively have to vote for Hillary, I wouldn't vote for Hillary. So in every deep red and deep blue state in the country, I would go and either write in Bernie or vote for Jill Stein. But in the swing states, and I can't give you guys advice, let's keep that in mind. I'm just telling you what I would do. If I was in Ohio or Florida or a state that we know is a swing state, in my estimation, Trump is worse. So I wouldn't risk a Trump presidency. I would hold my nose and cry and vomit and not sleep for a week and vote for Hillary Clinton in a swing state. That's basically my breakdown of it. But you have to understand that the work is never over. So in other words, like even if we were to get Bernie Sanders for president and he were to become president, he would even tell you the work ain't done. So at some times people hold their nose and vote for the lesser of two evils, but you wake up the very next day and you fight on systemic change. So you fight to get the Wolfpack Amendment through and get money out of politics. You know, you fight, like Bernie said, let's have more people who agree with me run for office. 20,000 people expressed interest. Over 7,000, I think, already signed up to run for office. So spawning more people who are like Bernie Sanders, spreading our ideas out there as much as possible, trying to get money out of the political system, fighting for certain reforms at a state level and at a federal level, all these things are massively important, and no matter who's in office, we have to keep fighting for them. All right, next question here is from Corey Cook. He asks, if I'm not mistaken, I heard you once say that any fictional literature is a waste of time. Why do you believe that? No, let me amend that. I'm not sure I even said that. It's a waste of time to me. So everybody, you know, to each their own, everybody's got their tastes. Some people absolutely positively love fictional books, and they can read them and get really into the plots and really love it, and it can give their life meaning and all this stuff. I don't begrudge that, you know, at all, and I don't take that away from them for a second. But I'm just saying, for me, I don't get the appeal of fictional books. I just don't get it. I never did. I'm borderline on the spectrum. Like, I'm borderline on the autism spectrum, where I have the most literal mind in human history, where if somebody, you know, tries to get me to enjoy something that's metaphorical or whatever, I'm like, I don't get it. But that didn't actually happen. Why is this? Why does anybody like this? I don't understand. And my always thing has been, like, there's so many amazing things that actually happen in the real world that why do you need to escape to an alternate reality in order to be interested? Like, fuck, man. World War I actually happened on this planet. Case closed. This Earth is amazing and fascinating and crazy enough. World War II happened. I mean, look at all the different... Whatever the fuck it is, it doesn't matter. You go back, old Roman Empire shit. That's all fascinating. So to me, I don't need fiction, and it doesn't click with me. For whatever reason, it doesn't click with me. Another question from this guy. He asks, do you have any friends that have a right-wing bent? And if you do, do you get angry or frustrated when debating issues with them? That's a great question. So the answer is yes. I do have friends that lean right. But it's a matter of degree, man. Like, recently, there's a bunch of people on Twitter who are coming after me because I don't want to have a debate with Steven Crowder. Yeah, I don't want to debate Steven Crowder because I think he's a crazy person. And I mean that. So here we have a guy who believes that a zombie Jew carpenter is literally a god. He's a Christian. He believes that. Here we have a guy who thinks climate change is a hoax. Here we have a guy who did a segment about how Hitler is a liberal. There is such a thing as TFG, dog, too far gone, where you're just wasting your time. You're yelling at a brick wall. He's not interested in a real conversation. What he's interested in is spreading his preposterous ideas, and he has a political agenda, and he's not a genuine actor. I don't view him as a genuine counterpart. It's no different than debating with creationists about the world being 6,000 years old when we know as a matter of scientific fact it's not. It's no different than debating evolution, whether or not that's real. Like, there are some things, I'm not going to debate the existence of Vishnu because I think that's stupid and that's outside of the realm of respectable debate. So, yeah, there are some things that are just too far gone, and honestly, I don't know if this makes me a bad person, not open-minded, whatever, I cannot rationalize being friends with somebody who's a crazy person who disagrees with me on everything. Look, I'm open to the idea that I'm wrong about a lot of stuff. I'm not open to the idea that I'm wrong about everything. I know 2 + 2 = 4. So it's within reason. So yes, I have a lot of friends who are right-leaning. Yes, I have a lot of friends who you could probably loosely categorize as libertarian-ish. I love that, man. I love having debates and conversations with smart, intelligent, rational people who disagree with me. One example of that is this guy, Sargon of Akkad, this YouTuber, Sargon of Akkad. I had 2 conversations with him. I'm looking forward to having more in the future. We don't agree on everything. We don't agree on everything by a long shot. But you know what? He's a smart guy, and I respect his opinion. And he's not somebody who I think might be a troll or just be a stupid person. So respectable disagreement conversation is great and healthy, but there are limits. So, I have right-leaning friends, but the right-leaning friends are smart people. They're not crazy people. And I wouldn't have the most insane variety. I'm not going to become buddy-buddy with Hannity, for example. Okay, so, next question. Kyle Hanley asks, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz. Got to bang one, marry one, kill one. Oh, goodness. All right, just so everybody knows here, we're speaking metaphorically. I don't want to get a knock on the door about making direct threats of violence over the kill question. Okay, I'm answering this question because you asked it, and I keeps it real. So, bang, Hillary. Duh. Marry. I'm going Donald Trump. Why? Because it is nothing but sheer entertainment. Look, I disagree with the guy on almost everything, but God damn it, is he entertaining, and it's fun to watch him talk and do shit. Now, the whole time I'd wear a fucking chastity belt, but I would enjoy watching him go around the world and make an ass of himself and to give these speeches and do his non sequiturs and give his, you know, patented speaking style where he's punchy and short and to the point. It'd be fun to travel the world and watch this jackass do his thing. So that's a no-brainer. Kill? Come on now! Come on now! Honestly, this was an easy question. Like, you would think it's like, ooh, what a hard one. This is easy. And in fact, if you disagree with my lineup here, I think you are objectively wrong. Like, this isn't a matter of opinion. If you go bang, marry, kill, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and you don't go in the order I went, what's wrong with you? All right, let's do more here. God, I fucking love these. I love these questions. Okay. So for our 1,000 episode special here on Secular Talk, I'm going to go through some more questions from you guys that you submitted on Facebook. Jamie Marshall asks, who is a public figure, political or not, that you used to admire but have lost a lot of respect for? I'm going to leave that one alone, but I could say some stuff. Ramon Colon asks, if Bernie Sanders becomes the nominee and eventually president, do establishment Dems and Republicans work together to serve the donors to obstruct more than during Obama's presidency? That's a great question. Yes, of course they would. But that's one of the things that's so great about Bernie Sanders is he's FDR 2.0. And for any of you who know about political history in depth, you could call him FDR 2.0 or LBJ 2.0. And what do those Democrats know how to do? Fight. They know how to play politics. They know how to twist the right arms at the right times. And I have full faith and confidence in Bernie Sanders that he would know how to do that. So let me just give you one example here because it really shows you the difference between weak center-right corporatist Democrats like Obama versus somebody who's a true liberal and progressive like Bernie Sanders. On the Obamacare debate, did you know that at the time the Democrats had a supermajority? So they could have gotten anything they wanted. Now, it is true that some of those Democrats were what's called blue dog Democrats, which are Democrats from very Republican-leaning states, so they have to be like right-wing Democrats in order to get reelected. So they have to oppose Obama on all these different things. But the Democrats had a supermajority at the time when they passed Obamacare. Here's what Obama would have done if he really wanted to get single payer, or if he really wanted to get a public option. You call the blue dogs into your office and you say this, hey, I'm going to make this very simple. At the time, he's wildly popular, too. Remember that, Obama was. If you don't vote for single payer, I, myself, the DNC, we will take all the resources, all the money we have. We will primary your punk ass. I will come and campaign for that person every single day, and you will lose your political career. So your options are very simple. Vote for single payer or lose your political career. Your choice. Get the fuck out of my office. That's how you play politics. That's what LBJ would have done. That's what FDR would have done. Obama didn't do that at all. In fact, he caved multiple times to the Republicans, went from single payer to public option to individual mandate, their old plan, the old Republican plan, got that through and then wanted a pat on the back. Now, don't get me wrong, it's a step in the right direction because any reform was a step in the right direction, but you could have got single payer if you just fought for it. Bernie Sanders would have fought for it. He knows how to twist arms behind the scenes. He knows how to play politics. He knows how to double down. He knows how to be aggressive. He knows how to frame things. Obama doesn't. Hillary Clinton, I'm not sure, wants these progressive things. She wants to be where Obama is on the spectrum or a little to the right of that. So that's the difference. So even if they were to try to fight against him, you can fight back. You have the bully pulpit. You have the loudest fucking voice in the country. The idea that it's like, oh, poor president, like, oh, what a victim. No, you have the fucking bully pulpit. Throw your goddamn weight around. That's what's great about Bernie Sanders. They would unite against him, and he would in turn crush them. Next question, Adam D'Angelo says, are we ever going to let Congress legislate anymore, or are we at a time where we just legislate everything through the Supreme Court? Okay, So first of all, Congress doesn't do dick because it's GOP-led. They're massively obstructionist. They're not a legitimate political party anymore. And they literally broke the filibuster record under Obama. So that's why Congress doesn't do anything. It's because it's mostly Republican idiots who that's their goal is to not do anything. So you can place blame squarely on them for that. Okay. Now, again, when the Democrats had a supermajority, they should have done more and they should have thrown their weight around more and been more aggressive. But now that the Republicans have the numbers, they have the numbers, so it's a much harder thing to do to fight back against it, and many of them are like Louis Gohmert and literally crazy. Okay, but on the issue of SCOTUS, I'm actually not in league with a lot of other liberals on this. So Tom Hartman, for example, he's done segments, and I love Tom Hartman, by the way, really great guy, progressive host, the godfather of liberal talk radio, one of the main reasons I'm doing what I'm doing now. But his position on the Supreme Court is almost like, they shouldn't have the option of judicial review, which is to check the constitutionality of the actions of other branches of government. I disagree with that. I think they should have judicial review, and they should be able to say, hey, this action from the president is unconstitutional. It's just obviously you want the right people on the court. I mean, in modern times, it's been a right-wing court. Since it's been a right-wing court, they've done a lot of damage. The answer is not to throw the baby out with the bathwater and take away the option of judicial review from the Supreme Court. The answer is to get a liberal Supreme Court that makes sense and actually interprets the law in a rational way. So it's not wrong for the Supreme Court to say, hey, what you're doing here is unconstitutional. It's just we've had a shitty court for a long time, and we need to change that. All right, next. Dan Plone. Where do you get your start, and how did you know this is what you wanted to do? Okay, I could go on forever on this, but I'll try to make it short. In 2008, I started the Secular Talk YouTube channel. I just made some political videos every now and then because I'm interested in politics. Somebody reached out to me at the time. What the fuck was the name of the site? I'm forgetting, but if I remember, I will put it in writing at the bottom of the screen when this hits YouTube. And the site was – the idea behind the site was you rank the spin of – different segments and articles. So you can vote, oh, this is spun in a Republican direction, this is spun in a Democratic direction. And the guy hired three hosts, I believe, one Republican, one Democrat, or one conservative, one liberal, one libertarian. I was the liberal host that he hired. I would get paid $50 to do these segments on whatever I wanted to do the segments on. They'd post them on the site, and then it'd be people would vote up, down, or whatever. The guy, he kind of did it as a hobby, so it was like, you know, never really got off the ground. Eventually the site went under and he shut the whole operation down. But I went from doing a YouTube channel for a little bit, just doing videos every now and then, to somebody reaching out to me saying, I'll pay you $50 per video if we could put it on this site. And from then I was kind of hooked. So 2008, we just did segments every now and then. In 2010, after this site had shut down, I decided I want to do the Blog Talk Radio show, which is just a live show with shitty audio, but you know, wanted to do that because I wanted to consolidate material and not just do little clips. And then at some point, the live show and the YouTube channel kind of linked up, and they just became Secular Talk and the Kyle Klinsky Show. And then, you know, I've spoken how when I graduated college in 2010, I went and worked at a car dealership for about a year and a half, left there. And then when I left there, I said, fuck it, I'm going to see if I can make this a living and I could do this and make money off it. I only did it for maybe a few months, and then TYT was expanding. They reached out to me, offered a contract for me to become part of the network. I became part of the network as an affiliate, so I have total and utter control of everything I say and do, but I'm under the umbrella of their network, and then it just fucking took off. And now this is what I do. So I got my start just from doing YouTube and then briefly getting paid a little bit for this one site where, you know, they pay $50 per video, and then now it's blossomed into this thing where we literally beat some of the biggest names in news. I mean, we are ranked online. We're ranked number 5 in all news and politics. Think about that. On the entire internet, Secular Talk is number 5 in news and politics. I mean, that's ridiculous. We're right behind the White House. That makes absolutely no sense. I mean, it's ridiculous. But hey, you set this thing up, you build it, and they will come. If you send out a good product, everybody knows I care deeply about the facts and the information and the data, and then I give my opinion. It just happened to blossom into something that's great, and it's bigger than I could have ever imagined, and I never want to stop. I'll keep doing this until I fucking croak and die. And believe you me, I have no interest. Like, some people get into this, and I've spoken to some behind the scenes where it's like, what's your move? Where do you want to end up? Where's the end goal? TV? Is that what you want? TV? No. Like, I don't even understand those conversations. I'm like, what? Why would I want to go somewhere where I have a boss and there are rules and it's annoying and I got to deal with a whole bunch of people I don't want to deal with when I could just do it here myself on YouTube, have no bosses, do it exactly my way, and still do okay? To me, it's a no-brainer, but everybody else still has that mindset. Got to climb that ladder, got to get to the next place, got to go on TV, got to do this, got to do that. I'm good, dog. I'm good right here. All right, next question. Jake Tupper, not to be confused with Jake Tapper. We often criticize the mainstream media. If you were in charge of a mainstream media outlet like CNN or MSNBC, how would you run the network? Very simple. I do exactly what I'm doing right now for my show. Facts, news, information, data, and opinion after that. Okay. And that's why they'd never hire me. They'd never hire me because the shit I say directly threatens their bottom line because corporate sponsors might flee when I say, hey, your corporate sponsors are pieces of shit. So, you know, there is a conflict of interest there. Now, on YouTube, we do have advertisements, but the way YouTube does it is actually brilliant because they have this massive buffer. I literally have never had any conversation ever with a single sponsor on Secular Talk ever, ever. So they do it where YouTube deals with it and Google deals with it, and they set it up and they run the ads, and I literally never see any of them, never talk to any of them. There is, by no stretch of the imagination, a conflict of interest. The way it works for corporate media is that's not the case. If you say something they don't like on air, their corporate donors, they'll fucking call and say, X-nay on that shit. And, like, for example, Cenk, when he was on MSNBC, he attacked the Democratic Party too much. This wasn't a sponsor issue, but Democrats in Washington said, little too aggressive, and then eventually MSNBC tried to lower his role, put him on the weekends, and he said, look, if this is like the hush money you pay me to go and be more quiet on the weekends, I'll just leave. So, I mean, that's the answer, is if I was in charge of CNN or MSNBC, I would make it like what I do, and the ratings would be fantastic, but all the advertisers would flee, which is why they would never, ever, ever do it. Because it's not even about ratings as the number one thing. Because, again, I could make it so their ratings are number one. But they wouldn't do it because they'd lose the sponsor money. And the sponsor money is more important than even the ratings. Okay. And I'm almost done here with the questions. Just a little bit more. Bijan Nirumand asks, just one question. Where the hell have you been before and who pays you for this BS? To be honest with you, you've had 1,000 episodes too many. Who pays me for this? You, bitch! Thanks for watching. Colin Algarin asks, with the influx of technologies and machines taking over much of the labor job market, some say eventually a majority of all markets, how long do you think it will be until the idea of a universal basic income and its theoretical benefits enters the political conversation? It might not. I mean, actually, that's not fair. To a certain extent, it has in Europe. In the U.S., it's hard to imagine that happening. Maybe it does, but it's just hard to imagine it in today's context. Because Stephen Hawking has spoken about this. He said, understand something, guys. We're at a place where it's a crossroads. So we have massive income inequality, and the captains of industry can now, you know, they have the resources to have these machines, these robots, this technology to take over the labor market. If they do that and we don't set up a system, a governmental system, where you, yes, redistribute wealth, where, for example, a robot, a machine, the technology, a certain amount of it is assigned to you, and then you reap the benefits of the economic output that they do, if we don't do that, it can get dangerous, and we could be at a time where, you know, there can be violence and there can be political instability, the likes we haven't seen in a long time, if ever. So, and again, this is Stephen Hawking saying it, not me. I'm an idiot. He's a genius. He's saying, we have this technology. Eventually, it will take over the marketplace, and you won't need people to do the work anymore. That could either lead us to a pseudo-semi-utopian state, or it could lead us to the most disastrous state imaginable, where people are just expendable and useless and swept aside, and they don't get any, you know, money or material well-being, and then that's the instability, and that could be the potential violence. Or you can use this for everybody's benefit. And if you redistribute wealth properly and give everybody a leisurely lifestyle and a decent quality of living, then we don't even have to work and we have a good quality of life. So that's the place we're at. I don't know which direction we'll go, but all the evidence right now points to we're leaning in the wrong direction because of the massive income inequality we already have and the fact that the elites are very stubborn and they seem to not get it that if you don't do this redistribution of wealth, in the long run, it's going to hurt you too. All right, Samuel Shave asks, you recently mentioned that the majority of people asked said they felt the United States was the biggest threat to the world security. Do you agree? If yes, then what are the main factors? And if not, who would you say is the biggest threat? Okay, so this is a really interesting question, and the answer is actually very complex. So understand that the way the poll asked the question is they said the word nation. Which nation is the biggest threat to world peace? They didn't say which group. They didn't phrase it in a way where things other than nations were in the conversation. So when you phrase it like that, then it kind of becomes an empirical question. The question is, empirically, if you look at the numbers, which nation has been more involved in more wars all around the world, done more invasions, done more interventions, and which subsequently has led to less stability, and people view it as the biggest threat? So the answer is, it's an objective question and an empirical answer. And the answer is, yeah, whether or not we like it, as Americans, I certainly don't like it. But in modern times, as a nation, we've led more to instability, and we are the biggest threat to world peace. So just to give you guys some background on this, since World War II, we've intervened in China, Korea, Guatemala, Indonesia, Cuba, the Congo, Dominican Republic, Peru, Laos, Vietnam, Cambodia, Lebanon, Grenada, Libya, El Salvador, Nicaragua, Iran, Libya, again, Iraq, Kuwait, Somalia, Bosnia, Sudan, Afghanistan, Yugoslavia, Serbia, Pakistan, Yemen, Syria. So that no other nation is anywhere near that. During the period of the Cold War, we overthrew South American democracies and put in fascist dictators as we said we're making the country more democratic. Ridiculous. Right now, we're involved in 7 different interventions. Some places it's just airstrikes, some places just drone strikes, some places special ops forces on the ground. There's a reason why people say we can either dismiss everything that everybody says on this, or we can try to see why they're saying what they're saying. I think the reason why the U.S. ranks the biggest threat to world peace as a nation is because of stuff like this, and it's time to acknowledge it. Now, who else is a big threat? Russia. You can't deny that. Now, many people would say, oh, they're purely defensive in their actions against NATO and the West. Maybe, maybe not. I think that's a complex question. Putin is certainly not a rational character. There are political assassinations that happen in Russia. Ooh, look at that. The opposition guy just got killed. What an amazing coincidence. And it was just outside the Kremlin, too, by the way. So it doesn't mean Putin's not a good guy. A lot of people think, oh, he's a good guy. He's purely defensive. I don't know about that, and I don't think that's true. Yeah, it's weird and strange and questionable and bad that he just annexed Crimea. Some people argue, hey, it was purely to protect the people in Crimea because the Ukraine was taken over by Western forces, and they immediately passed laws that were against the people of Russian heritage. I don't want to get into all that. I don't want to get into all the details on that. But just know, yeah, the countries that destabilize the world the most, the United States, Saudi Arabia, probably tied with us because of they spread Wahhabism throughout the world. I mean, they spread Salafi mosques, Wahhabi mosques, the most literal ultra-conservative interpretation of Islam that's a scourge, it's a cancer upon this earth. They do that, they behead people for sorcery, apostasy, witchcraft, drug smuggling. So it's Saudi Arabia, the U.S., and probably Russia that are in the top tier. And then you drop down a tier, you probably get Israel, Iran, and a few others sprinkled in there. But yeah, I don't think the people who answered that poll are crazy. They have good reason to believe these things, and it's just that the propaganda that we get in this country about how all we care about is altruism and humanitarianism largely worked and makes people think, oh, when we invade places, it's because we're good people and because we care about everybody. That's not true. Everybody else sees through it. We apparently don't. Okay. Sweet Jeebus, I'm running out of time. Let's go to Martin O'Malley, try to squeeze in this story. Martin O'Malley and Arizona Governor Jan Brewer went at it over Obama calling Trump a bigot. Let's watch.
Very very different here, Jake.
Okay.
And Governor Brewer, President Obama doesn't say this about all Republicans, but he does say rightly that Donald Trump is a bigot, Donald Trump is a racist, Donald Trump, in fact, is making fascist appeals. That's why many self-respecting Republicans are not supporting Donald Trump for president. Look, being president of the United States is the toughest job in the world. And I can tell you, as someone who has worked with Secretary Clinton and competed against her, that she is a tough person who's ready to do this job. Donald Trump is an unstable charlatan who is appealing to the worst instincts in people. And I believe ultimately the American people are going to reject that. This is a very different sort of candidacy. This is not the party of Lincoln.
Governor
Brewer.
You know, we need to discuss policy. And every
time.
President Obama and Hillary Clinton, every time you disagree with them, it doesn't matter which subject it is, you're a bigot or you're a racist.
No, that's not true.
And I'll talk immigration until we go home.
Let me bring in Ken Cuccinelli.
Let's talk about immigration.
Governor, let me take one break here for 1 second. I want to bring in Ken
Cuccinelli. Governor Brewer, absolutely right about that. This is a fallback when you have a president who cannot defend his policies and their outcomes, and so he jumps immediately to the race card, racist card in particular. It's a common tactic for Democrats.
All right, so I have two thoughts about this. Number one, it's just true that Trump is a bigot. If Trump isn't a bigot, then the whole concept of a bigot needs to be eliminated and it doesn't exist. Because here you have a guy who says, and this is all policy related. It's not like we're just saying it, but, oh, he said something that's uncomfortable, therefore he's a bigot. No, it's because of his policies. So, for example, he says, let's round up 11 million undocumented immigrants and ship them out. Okay, well, if you do that, you are quite literally saying all undocumented immigrants are a problem. So you're treating them all like they're criminals. That is not true, but you want to take them all and ship them out. Now, again, he wants to ship out 11 million undocumented immigrants. I don't know how else to view that other than bigotry, because you don't like them, and let's be clear, you're not talking about German immigrants, Polish immigrants, Canadians. No, you're talking about Mexicans, people of Hispanic descent. So you want to kick all them out of the country. You want to ban 1.6 billion Muslims from entering the country. Okay, that's ridiculous. That means that you view Sufi Muslims, Ahmadi Muslims, moderate Sunnis and Shias the same as ISIS. That is bigotry. That's almost the definition of bigotry. When you launched your speech, you said, they're criminals, they're rapists. I assume some are good people, talking about Mexicans, meaning you're saying a majority are criminals and rapists. No, we call you a bigot because you're a bigot, but they make it seem like, oh, it's this fallback the Democrats go to because they can't talk policy. No, that is policy related, and we call you a bigot because you are a bigot, okay? That's point number one. Point number two is, look, there actually is a grain of truth in the point that certain Democrats overuse that and don't talk about the other policy enough. Why? Because on the other policy, they're not Bernie Sanders. So Bernie can bring up the fact that Donald Trump is a bigot and a xenophobe, and then also pivot to, oh, by the way, money corrupts our political system, and it's horrible, and I'm against TPP and trade deals, and let me tell you about how on these other issues Trump is wrong and I'm right. Now, Trump pays lip service to being on the right side of this, but all Bernie has to say is, you're not against trade deals, you profit from them. A lot of your shit is made in China. End of discussion. So Bernie doesn't over-rely on the bigot point. Obama and Hillary do. Why do they? Because they can't really talk about TPP against Donald Trump because his rhetoric's better than theirs, and Obama's just for TPP, and Hillary is behind the scenes, but she pretends like she's against it now. So she can't hit him on, hey, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, my position is better, because he said he doesn't want to cut it. So, yeah, Obama and Hillary, all they play is that card because that's all they have against him because they're not as populist as Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is more populist. Bernie Sanders is more anti-corruption. Since he's more anti-corruption, he can hit Trump not only on his bigotry but on every other policy, which is why, as we said from the beginning, the best person to run against Donald Trump is Bernie Sanders because he takes away all of his populist and anti-establishment appeal and on top of that gets to rightly call him a bigot. Whereas Obama and Hillary cannot do that because they're really not all that populist. And they're not that anti-establishment. They are the establishment. So they over-rely on that bigot card, even though it's true. I'm out of time. Back tomorrow with a whole bunch of great stuff. Love all you.
Peace. Mwah.